And UFO Radio, and tonight we have with us Antoinette Dykus, and she wrote a book on what is the name of your book again, Antoinette?
Secrets from the Grave: The Untold Secrets of Al Capone.
Oh, okay. And now, where are you from?
I'm from Chicago.
Chicago. Okay. Well, we're not very far from each other. I'm over by Lake Geneva. So.
Yes, I heard about your website because of your work with the Underground Tunnel, and you had wrote the book about Capone. I'm an entrepreneur from Chicago, and I've been helping promote all different kinds of projects. And someone had owned a bar that was supposedly owned by Capone during Prohibition, and my task was to find out if it truly was. And it just developed into this wonderful story with all kinds of ghosts and mysteries that were unsolved. I've located a location that more people died than the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. And now I can prove it, you know, and back it all up. And so it explains the hauntings and why all these things have been going on there for so long. It's like the spirits from the grave have just been pulling me to, you know, tell their story and point me in the right direction.
Well, okay, so we've got some time. Let's tell us some interesting stories that you have on the book.
Okay. Well, when we first... Underground tunnel at the location that I'm speaking of still has an artesian well that still bubbles water from it.
Oh, okay.
And when you go in the cavern, it's all limestone, the underground tunnel.
Now, this artesian well is, well, can you see it on the surface?
Yes, yes you can. Comes up about almost two foot up from the ground, and it's inside of the entrance of the underground tunnel. And the tunnel entrance is all carved in limestone. And what's really neat is that there's, you know, of course, no electricity or anything. But every time we have taken different ghost hunters and psychics and film crews down there, we always have technical problems with audio, video, cameras go out. You know, they test their equipment before they go in. And, you know, all kinds of phenomena happen inside of these tunnels. It's really neat. When you go in, you can just feel the presence. And I've always had kind of a gift. You know, so I could see orbs, you know, with, you know, my bare eye, where they caught them on film. And as they were filming them, I could see them, you know, without the night vision lenses. And when I was a kid, I used to think I could see molecules. But until I started doing this research on Al Capone and the underground tunnels, I realized they're not molecules. You know, they're actually orbs, which is a strange thing. And I don't know too much about orbs, but I'm looking into all that now, because I wouldn't say I'm psychic, but I definitely have a gift. And it really excelled once I got the West Nile virus. I'm a survivor of the West Nile virus. And then I also had a bad car accident, so I had two close brushes with death, and ever since it's like opened a door, and I can't channel it because I don't know how to control it, and I only get the input, you know, that it wants me to get. So, you know, I can't just turn it on to focus towards something. It pulls me to this direction. It's like they want me to tell their story.
I understand that very well. We go through it right here.
Right. It was after I talked to you, you know, and you heard about your book, I had went to another location. I have several locations I've been doing research on for over 10 years. And I looked at it in a different aspect. So I went to a location, which I don't want to tell this location because I'm about to go public with it. And I had to lie to get in, you know. And
what do you mean you had to lie to get in?
I said I was a reporter for the Chicago Tribune.
Oh.
But I was going, I mean, something, I woke up. This was my birthday. Something had, in my sleep, told me to go there. I had a birthday party planned at my parents. Friends wanted to take me for drinks, you know, for lunch. And I felt drawn. I had to go. Well, I hit the jackpot. I went in, and I found there's an entrance to the underground tunnel, and it's been sealed off for a long time. And I know the history about it. I've known of this location over 10 years. Excuse me. And
now you've also found that true too. That's what I'm running into too. Is these tunnels are sealed off?
Not all of them.
Okay.
Not all. That's my discovery. Not all of them are. I know of several that are. But I also know of at least three that you can still enter.
Oh, okay.
And this one here was never properly sealed right.
Uh-huh.
So I just had a hunch. Like I said, I don't know. I get feelings. I'm not psychic. I don't know what it is, what the gift is that I have.
Uh-huh.
But I get feelings. And I had all these people waiting on me. I lied to get in there. And once I got in, it was like they just led me to where I needed to go. Part of the wall was, you could just peel apart with your fingernail, and the bricks underneath were put together with, like, flour and mud. So I used my fingernail to remove, you know, the mixture in between the bricks, which would normally be mortar, and I discovered a stockpile of shoes.
Oh, so it looked like mortar, but it wasn't mortar.
Right, right. It would hold the bricks together. You know, you would think it would be because they're brick, you know, it was a bricked wall. But
uh-huh.
In fact, it was like flour and mud, I would think.
Uh-huh.
Well, I removed some of the bricks, and there was all kinds of shoes. Of course, I was excited and took pictures and removed more bricks until I could get to the shoes. And I thought, wow, how could Al Capone, why? You know, and why would they hide the shoes? I just didn't understand. And then it dawned on me, you know, Capone didn't build the tunnels, he'd use them.
Right.
Slaves did. You know, and I know all about this location's history.
Yeah, that's what I always thought. That's what I've been always telling people is, no, it wasn't the underground. It wasn't used for they weren't made for the underground tunnel or underground railroad.
Right.
That they found them.
Right, they found them and they used them.
Mm-hmm.
And the slaves had, you know, but not until after speaking to you and finding out a little bit about your book, I didn't even look at it that way. And so then the shoes didn't make sense. And I thought, duh, they're the shoes. They have to be slave shoes. There were so many different pairs of shoes. Lots of them were similar. And some of the shoes that I took out told the tale. You know, I like when I held them, I could feel, you know, like this person had a hard life and whatnot. I was filthy, had cobwebs everywhere, but was excited. Then it just led me to another part of the building because I had once lived at this location, but it's been over 10 years. And I found a secret room in between the walls and a cabinet in the wall that I never knew was there. And I kind of managed a property at one time when I was there. It had keys to you know, all this area, and found stuff I didn't even know. And then I found the original pieces of the wall where the brick was put in with the mortar and mud.
Mm-hmm.
What was it, mortar? It's like mud and flour. I guess that's all the slaves had to use.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I found pieces of the actual wall and the tiles that were used to build houses over about 120 years ago. They had patent numbers, serial numbers, the company that made them. So, of course, I asked if I could have it, and the guy said he didn't care. He didn't think it was anything. He even let me have the shoes.
Mm-hmm.
He was convinced they were shoes of homeless people, but I knew better. The shoes were made with screws and different. At one time, I'm sure they were very expensive shoes. So I had the shoes appraised. Sure enough, the shoes are over 100 years old, and they were commonly worn by domestic slaves. So I've uncovered a safe house. You know, since then I've been doing tons of research, and here I've been doing this Capone thing, and I can prove so many locations, and I've got tunnel entrances all through this area, and it's like from the grave. These guys are just leading me, telling me which way to go, and it's so fascinating. And what I'm doing, not right now, I'm in the works of looking for help, you know, for someone to put my story together. I'm not a writer. I'm a researcher, you
uh-huh.
know, and I'm a storyteller, but I'm not a writer.
Uh-huh.
So I went to the internet, and that's how we found each other, to find help, to help me put it all together. I have pictures, artifacts, you know, tons of locations. And my sources are, you know, credible. I go through the Chicago Historical Society, you know, the local towns out here, other historical societies, newspaper archives, Encyclopedia of Chicago, FBI files, the Cook County Sheriff files. And so all my sources are credible, and I found a whole unsolved piece of history, you know, like a little chapter they left out. And in some aspects, I fill in blanks for, like, FBI files and the alcohol, the ATF files, you know, of locations they had, but I can actually put locations with the stories they have.
Uh-huh.
And it's just been an incredible ride. And people kind of get freaked out because I'm drawn by ghosts. I don't know if there are ghosts. You know, that's why I was interested in talking to you. I'm sure there are, but I don't know if ghost is the right word.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. I know what you mean.
Because I've always been guided. Like I said, it's been a gift. my entire life. But to find something like this is just incredible. So now my Capone research is snowballed into this Underground Railroad thing, and it's just been incredible. I wish you could come down to Chicago and take some pictures yourself.
Oh, yeah, we plan on it. We do, because I definitely want to get down there and check that out with you.
Right now I'm working on some of the artifacts I have, you know, as I told you, with the tunnel. The tunnel there's huge stones, because I found a couple different ways to get through the wall, and there's one of them, but it's not my property. I'm sure it has to get permission. We could actually get in there,
mm-hmm.
you know. And it's incredible. I'd like, maybe I'll email you a couple pictures.
Oh, I'd love to
see
them.
With the viewers on your website of the actual shoes and the entrances, and it's just unbelievable. And people are like, how did you find this? I guess you could compare my gift to, you ever seen the movie Stir of Echoes with Kevin Bacon? It comes in little pieces.
Uh-huh.
So I can't put it together. I've always kind of felt a connection like with John Edward also.
Uh-huh.
And from the Sci-Fi channel. So sometimes when I get something, it's not clear, you know, and sometimes it's crystal clear exactly what to do and where to go.
Well, now, how long have you been working on your book? Can you give the name of your book?
Over 10 years.
Over 10 years.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Right. And it's not complete now, but the title is Secrets from the Grave, The Untold Stories of Al Capone, The Underground Railroad.
Yeah, I'd love to have you send that book to us, too, for our library down
okay.
here. Yeah, I'll send you our address, and
okay.
then you can send it here. And then that way we can have it right here, and if... you know, people need to get a hold of you and order a book. Send us the information.
I'm having a hard time listening to the station here in Chicago. Now, when I was in Wisconsin visiting, I had heard a broadcast once.
Uh-huh.
And I was out there, but here in Chicago, is it possible for me to tune in on the station?
Oh, yeah, it's internet
okay.
radio. So
Great.
As long as you got a computer, you can hear
course.
It any place
yeah,
in the
I
world.
Yeah, I have several.
Yeah.
Up until now, I independently... funded all my research,
mm-hmm.
except for one of the bars, Widow McCleary's, that had hired me initially to help them.
Uh-huh.
And you know, so they paid me to help do the research for about 4 or 5 months.
Uh-huh.
But this has been a 10-year ongoing thing, and it's I'm just uncovered so much stuff from the grave. That's the title of my book, because. I can put Elvis Presley and Johnny Cash in Chicago Heights in a bar playing for the Mafia after Elvis came out of the Army
uh-huh.
and stuff. And it's all from these different people, because I'm from the area. They feel like I'm telling their story. And now it's so many decades have passed that they can talk about things, you know, because most of the people that know about Al Capone and the Underground Railroad read about it in books or see it on television. But for people who live in this area that I'm from, it's the norm. It was normal for us to go to school with people who were related, you know, to organized crime, you know, notorious people that we've seen on television,
uh-huh.
you know, or read about. It was the norm, you know, for all the things you guys see on TV, you know, the lifestyles and, you know, that was normal here. And it's not as much as it used to be. You know, like, you know, the old ways, the way, you know, things were taken care of, but it was an incredible time to be living here. And even though it was way after my time, you know, our grandparents and, you know, neighbors, everybody who's lived here can give first-hand accounts of different things that their families told them.
Well, we used to have that here in Burlington, too, and that... Yeah, well, see, I used to be a researcher of tunnels. Well, still am, and I've researched tunnels around the world, and
really?
I know how these tunnels connect to another tunnel that connects to another tunnel that connects to another tunnel.
Right.
And they honeycomb themselves or spiderweb themselves all around the world.
Wow. So you know, and I just got turned on to the. I didn't even look at it from your view until you know, we had corresponded through the internet.
Uh huh.
And once. You know, because everyone had always said, well, I've got this location. And a lot of the homes that have entrances are historical. You know, they've already got their preservation and everything with the government, you know, that they're historical sites for the architecture and whatnot. But none of them have been labeled for, you know, that part of it, their connection to the Underground Railroad.
Uh-huh.
You know, they have the slave servants' quarters and whatnot, but by me stumbling on these shoes of these slaves and pieces of the original wall, and it all can be traced back, just opens a whole new chapter.
Well, so now, what do you think of these, I'm trying to, I definitely have to get down there and look at this better for myself, but I'm trying to visualize this. Now, we know that this tunnel system is, you know, it goes all the way around the world. And we know that somebody else built these besides, you know, the people, you know, of the Underground Railroad.
Right.
Or we also know that Al Capone didn't do it.
Right.
But these people have come across these, you know, and have utilized them through the years. Now, like I said, what we've come across today is that these are, every place here in the Burlington area, they're all sealed with brick, okay, or large cement, center stones, they're called, big cinder blocks.
Yeah, right, I've seen, but they're really big. I've seen a couple of those, too.
Yeah.
But here where I am, you know, there are a couple, like the one that I started the whole book on, that you can still walk into. And it's weird because that one, it's like, some people say it could be lime, some people say it's blood splats, bullet holes, but whatever, we have forensics now. Back when, you know, this is one of the few tunnel entrances you can still walk through,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, I think it needs to be preserved.
Oh, you betcha.
And the owner's apprehensive.
Yeah.
And I says, it doesn't cost anything to become historic. It pays.
Uh-huh.
You know, and, but, you know, it gets, sometimes it gets overwhelming because I finance the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
It's like I'm trying to...
Yeah, I'm financing mine too.
Pushing over a square wheel up a hill.
Yeah.
But I'm doing it.
Yeah.
And now the people of Chicago Heights here, you know, for a long time I've been just people overflowing with people wanting me to come to locations. And I really couldn't make the time. And now, you know, the excitement's high. And I'm really to take it on. And some of the local networks out here want to do a story with me. Channel 9, Channel 11,
uh-huh.
here in Chicago, and write books. I even got an offer from Hollywood, California.
Really?
From the development team of The Grudge in the Ring 1 and 2.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't even want the facts. They just want me to send clips of any of the paranormal stories written, you know, this area connected with that.
Uh-huh.
And they would consider it.
Uh-huh.
So it's a real exciting time now. So I'm hoping to find some sponsorship or someone to help fund my research, because there's so much more to it that, you know, I can't keep up.
Oh yeah. Now, like I said, these tunnels go all the way around the world, and apparently Al Capone must have come across them, you know, not just the smaller tunnels either, because from what I understand, the tunnels were used to that he could distribute his bootleg liquor. And we've got reports that all the way down to Florida, as far north as Moose Jaw, Canada.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And they were able to, you know, they're driving in these they're driving in these tunnels.
They're that big.
And the tunnels are so big that you can take two big trucks and move them side by side without touching each other.
Yes. I have pictures, you know, that's why I can't wait for you to come to Chicago, one of the breweries owned by Capone, and we can now prove Capone took over, killed everyone there, and, you know, and the owners, and took over. I talked to people in the Historical Society that used to brew pop there before Capone took over.
Uh-huh.
The pop brewery. And I have pictures of the horse and buggies with the old-fashioned kegs of beer.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that could actually fit down in there. You know, and that's how they transported it. You know? And
So we have a brewery here that also has an underground tunnel. So you're saying that...
I'd love to see your location. Because, you know, in my 10 years of research, you know, it's all been there. It just took someone to put it all together.
Yeah.
And, you know, because anyone could have done what I've done with my work in the Underground Railroad.
Well, yeah, it seems great because, like, if you're concentrating on there in the Chicago Heights area,
right.
And I'm working at it here in Burlington. I also know another person that opened the whole thing in Whitewater, And she did a big report in the newspaper, what was it called, the Walworth Week. She's a newspaper reporter. And she did a big story on these underground tunnels that she found there. And she says they catacombed the whole city.
Oh, yeah.
And she says the chamber wasn't too pleased about it, you know, because apparently they don't really like anybody knowing about them.
Well, that's why they kept them so quiet for so long, I believe.
Uh-huh.
I've got Chicago and it's the whole southern suburbs, but it goes further than that. I can go way down in Illinois, some of the connections that I have made. And, like I said, some of them still have openings. A lot of them are undiscovered,
uh-huh.
You know, and not documented except for the pictures and the people saying, can you come to my location? You know, and just willing to give the information and let me do whatever I want with it. And it's just incredible. You know, like some of these Chicago Heights entrances are pretty scary. It is frightening. I mean, because I'm not afraid of, you know, spirits or, you know, supernatural things at all, but because of the people that are still living. Uh-huh. You know, maybe that's why they don't want some of these tunnels exposed. Because I'm sure one of these locations that I've been to, you know, could still be easily get into. I mean, you can do it. So it hasn't been sealed up that long. And the spot that they thought they sealed, there's two different entrances in one location. But that's very common. Little McCleary's has one where you can walk in by the well, but another entrance on the other side of the brewery where you can just walk in maybe 6 feet and then it's sealed. That's where they had put 10 men and a bear, Al Capone did. And he sealed them off.
10 men and a bear.
Al Capone in the brewery that I've been working on, he sealed 10 men and a bear that owed him some money in the cave and sealed it. And then the bear eventually ate them all. Well, in 1952, new people bought the brewery and were doing renovations, and they seemed like it looked something coming out of the wall with part of the bear claw. Took the wall down, they found the remains of 10 men and a bear. That means more people died there than the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. It explains why these entities or spirits won't leave me alone. They want me to finish telling their tale.
Oh,
so they
yeah.
can move on or whatever it is. You know,
Now, the tunnels that you found, you go just so far, then you come to a dead end and they're sealed again?
Yes.
Or how so?
Yes. Some of them, like, you can just tell, what, you know, that was sealed off there.
Mm-hmm.
But some you can actually walk through,
mm-hmm.
you know, so far, and then it's sealed.
And then it's sealed again?
Yes.
So I imagine if you opened up that, you could go even further.
Right.
And during
right.
the time of Al Capone, it wasn't sealed at all.
Right. And see, the location where I found the slave shoes, my old landlord told me that the government sealed it off after the Al Capone era. And that was it, you know.
Did they did she tell you why the government sealed them off?
No explanation. He was the owner of the building. And like I said, I managed the property. So I had keys to all the storage areas in the basement. And they even have a grapevine still in the backyard because, you know, they made their own wine.
Mm-hmm.
But I had lived in the servants' quarters. So I knew a lot of history about the house,
mm-hmm.
even before it became historical. But and everyone was curious, wanted to come down and see the way I sealed it off, because it looked cool.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, 10 years ago, the walls were starting to deteriorate and whatnot. But when I had gotten back in there in 2005, you know, and the first time I was in there was in 1994, the fake wall is just deteriorating because it's flour and mud. So slaves had to probably use whatever they had to, you know, make a fake wall.
And why do you think those slaves were making fake walls?
There's evidence. There's lots of evidence. But then there's other evidence
of what?
And another, where that got sealed off and others still came through. Now some people say that's later, the mafia, you know, the Al Capone guys.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, at this one location, there's two different ways to get in there. You know? And I could put locations with facts of history, Capone, and slavery. I could take this back, but beyond Capone. But I put Al Capone in the location.
Well, that's how I've been able to turn around and even begin to trace these underground tunnels. I've been tracing the movements of Al Capone
right.
from Chicago through here.
Right.
Because apparently he knew, he must have pretty well had these mapped out. I'm sure he didn't. He had his people mapped
well,
them out for him.
I've gone as far as I know where he got his source. He got them from the Indians. This area that I'm from here is sacred Indio burial ground.
Oh, ours is too.
And I have pictures of how it looked back then, you know, from different people, you know, that I've met in the historical societies in the suburbs and in Chicago, and how rural it really was, and a lot of the Native American Indians, you know, were still settled this way.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, now that might be where it's throwing you off, because see, the mound builders were not Native American Indians.
No, I know they weren't. I know they weren't. I know the home builders weren't. But the Indians had knew of these tunnels. They used them. They had used these tunnels before the home.
Right.
They were in between, you know, sometime in there. I just haven't got the timeline with the American Indians yet. But there's connections with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So these were used by the slaves, the American Indians, and El Capone.
They were also used by the Mormons. And okay, earlier
so
settlers. Because what they did is they discovered them, they built their homes on top of these so that they could use them for escape routes or, you know, to store things, banks, you know, making their own personal cache, you know, for banks, because they didn't trust the banks during that time.
Right, well, see, I knew the house where the one I told you that I found the shoes at, that was known to be Al Capone house, you know, and, they said it was a house of prostitution, you know, because they made the house so historical. And the way the house is built, they could see all three, you know, every angle of the house, the way the structure is.
Well, now, yeah, and Al Capone used the old speakeasies.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you could see every location. That's how I found out about the Elvis Presley and Johnny Cash used to come out here after Capone era and play for, in these little, you know, bars, you know, and, They were like regular people, you know. Well, they weren't regular people.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Capone guys, but they would come to these little lounges, speakeasies, what you call them, and then and perform.
Well, I think Frank Sinatra, for one.
Yes, he's also he's been known for a long time to be connected with Chicago Heights.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just so incredible, and that's why right now I'm trying to get my book completed. And I'm looking for, you know, sponsors and some kind of funding, which I found out now, a couple of these locations, I believe I qualify for federal government assistance for the identification and protection. Even if I don't own the property, it's for the person who identifies it and to help protect it. Then once it's identified, the owners of the property will get the option to preserve it and protect it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and then if, now, I don't know about the tunnel systems, but I do know, like, what the locals call the Indian burial mounds, you know, which we both know for fact is not burial mounds, but, or Indian, but even if they had them on their property, as long as they don't destroy them and they preserve them, that property that those mounds are sitting on, they don't have to pay any taxes, property tax on.
Right, there's a lot of different perks. You know, to this.
Well, you know also that if they are, you know, like burial mounds, and they do decide to tear them up anyhow and not report it, and they just destroy them, that's federal prison time.
Right.
Yeah. Just want to let the listeners know that. So if you got something there.
Yes, but you know, some people have, in this area here, like it was the norm.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I went to school with, you know, the grandchildren of the Untouchables, you know, and everybody here out in Chicago Heights area, when we went to school, we still benefited from the Al Capone. He was a local celebrity out this way.
Yeah.
He helped build this whole community, the whole south suburbs of Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, and
well, he had a summer home down here in Burlington too.
And the way they looked at him out here is he was celebrity status. I mean, even our high school, even though he was long gone when I graduated high school in the 70s. We still learned fencing, archery, weightlifting, you know, five different kinds of dancing, gymnastics, golfing, you know, some stuff that lots of, you know, nowadays people don't get that opportunity. But, they put that in our schools then, you know, way back in the day. There was the Capone guys that did that. We all benefited, I mean, tremendously.
So he was kind of like the Robin Hood
of
Chicago Heights.
In this area, you know, and it was real common to know somebody whose grandfather or, you know, even their own grandparents that were affiliated. In fact, the home that he had surrendered himself at Elliot Ness and the FBI when he was arrested for tax evasion is right here in Chicago Heights.
Mm-hmm.
And so here, for, you know, nobody ever spoke ill word, anything ill about Al Capone,
mm-hmm.
because he gave to the community. He developed it. If it wasn't for him, it wouldn't be what it is today.
Yeah.
That's for sure. But it's and there's still a lot of the old families here. The houses are beautiful, and some people get a little scared and freaked out.
Well, have you ever noticed wherever you get the underground tunnels, it seems like people report hauntings?
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I really do believe that that is connected to these tunnels. And
yeah,
I do believe what you tell me, because these people want to be, their bodies are down there. I mean, they suffered terrible deaths, and I think that their souls just don't rest.
Right.
And that's the reason that these tunnel systems are so haunted.
Right. And when they find someone who's had a little bit of interest in it, you know, or some kind of connection, they cling to you. If you're that kind of open person, I'm sure you might have felt that kind of experience in your research work with these tunnels.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They won't leave
somebody,
you alone.
Well, somebody's guiding me because, I mean, I'm right on. You
right,
know,
I mean, I've been guided.
but every tunnel I've come across so far, I mean, I've seen the tunnel entrances, okay? But every tunnel entrance I've found so far, you know, has been sealed.
So, yeah, you've definitely got to come to Chicago, and
yeah.
And I'll let you bring your camera, and you go in and show the viewers out there what we got here in Chicago.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them were untouched. I mean, I think it's because this was his second home when he was in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
And these people left this untouched except for the ones that were exposed. You know, here in Chicago Heights, they used to call, the FBI was known as Forever Bothering Italians. You know, that was what the, you know, older people used to say. Because, you know, the way they seen it, the Italians, all they did was gave the job, they had the jobs and kept business going, and it was such a booming city back then. I mean, my grandfather was in prison. I never met him. Actually, that's when it started, when I was in junior high.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in a Mexican prison for smuggling something across the Mexican border. I'm not sure.
Uh-huh.
We know it's illegal. He was in prison.
Uh-huh.
He came out, and we lived in Sauk Village. And he asked my father to take him to Chicago Heights. My mom freaked out. You don't know anybody in Chicago Heights. He put my mother in her place. My dad took him to Chicago Heights. He came back 3 days later with a brand new car packed with Samsonite luggage sets, you know, for him to sell.
Uh-huh.
These China, I don't know, they're like pepper, salt, pepper grinders and little vases and stuff, little knickknacks,
uh-huh.
complete sets.
Yeah, and during that time,
for him to sell.
Yeah, and during that time, that was the era of the traveling salesman, right?
And, then he came, and a wad full of money, I mean, big, and in the 70s, he gave my parents $500 and still had a huge wad with rubber bands around it.
Mm-hmm.
$500 in 1972, 73 was a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah.
And my mother's like, where did you get this money? My mother freaked out, mm-hmm. you know, and my grandfather told me when I was a kid, if you ever get in trouble, let them know I'm your grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother never talked about it again.
Mm-hmm.
We were never allowed to talk about it. My mom was irate, and I didn't know. You know, so I guess my family, through my grandfather, somehow was connected somehow. So it made me curious, you know, because they took such good care of my grandfather, you know.
Well, you know, did you ever consider that it might be the reason of the obsession you have with the underground tunnels, and
that
is because of a reincarnation factor, that maybe somehow you were that you were involved in that at some point in time in another life, and of course naturally the soul has a tendency to, when it is reborn, it reborns itself back into that family. And, you know,
that's really odd.
Yeah.
Did you say that? Because I never really considered that, but I am also an ancestor of Pancho Villa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we just found out my mother's 70.
And you see, that would be, the grandfather connection to that Mexican prison would be some sort of a karma thing based off some sort of experience that he had in another life when he was with Pancho Villa.
Wow. You know, I never...
And he could have rode with... You know, at that point in time, rode with Punchfield.
A little bit.
Yeah, because you're always born back, always... Well, most of the time, I mean, you know, I'm sure there's an exception to the rule, but in most times, that's what happens, is you're born right back into the family group. So, you know, you could be a reincarnation of a grandfather, a great-grandfather, a great-grandmother, or whatever.
Right.
And that's why you have that all these memories, is because it's not just so much that the spirits are guiding you. You know, your soul knows, your spirit knows.
Right. And you know, I also have a great grandfather who was an Indian chief.
Mm-hmm.
that had died at the Alamo, and my grandfather told me that we had lived on sacred Indian burial ground.
Mm-hmm.
And that this, we were, you know, because of our Indian heritage, we were, you know, always being home here and guided and safe. I never understood it as a kid.
Yeah.
But he says because of my, you know, my mother's 78% American Indian.
Uh-huh. What type?
She is Shawnee.
Uh-huh, Shawnee.
And Sioux.
Uh-huh.
And I never knew. I grew up thinking I was a Polish-Mexican.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't know Spanish, neither did my grandparents or my great-grandparents. Well, it made sense because we were of Native American. We have more blood, you know.
Uh-huh.
We cooked a lot of the ways other, you know, my Mexican restaurants and stuff did. Some of them, not all. But then when I went to museums, it all, you know, came together full circle. And then in 1981, my brother had gotten married. I did the genealogy thing to find out our family tree, and mm-hmm. we found out we were ancestors to Pancho Villa. That's where the Mexican line came in.
Okay, so you can see the connection back and forth all the time.
Oh yes, absolutely.
You know,
it
because
totally
of
makes
the
sense.
Yeah, because the okay, so with the Alamo, you know, there you've got your Mexico, you know, / American. Then you got the Pancho Villa connection. Then your grandfather had the connection with the Mexican prison, and then you had your connection with the mound builders. And it just keeps bouncing back and forth.
Yeah, so
and then, of course, your connection with your grandfather's connection with the underground tunnels. Now your connection with the underground tunnels. Yeah, I can see the pattern. You know.
Well, yeah, it's wild. I didn't look at it that way. And you know.
Well, see, that's what you have to do, and I think that. Researchers, when they're doing this, you know, they need to open up and look at all avenues of where this information is coming from.
Right.
And if you can learn how to, by doing so, you can kind of like zero in on that frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And once you can zero in on that frequency, bingo.
Right.
Then after that, it's just like, you know, the dominoes, you know. Just
right. It was about 6 months ago, I was sitting and, you know, doing my work. You know, this kind of work is rewarding for you, but it doesn't always have the paycheck to go with it. You know that. But I just knew, you know, when I was going, this is what I'm supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is what I'm led to do. I'm led by something beyond me.
Yeah.
That just dropped these pieces in my lap. Anybody else could have done this. Anybody else, you know, with more of an education probably, you know, could have put it together a lot faster.
Uh-huh.
But for some reason, I've been driven. And it won't let me go now.
Yeah. Well, I think people put way too much emphasis on letters behind names as far as education goes. Because if this is your life path to find these tunnels, you know, and to bring this to the attention, it doesn't make any difference if you're a PhD or what. I mean, you know,
right.
When you've got that job to do, I mean, it's simple as that. You've got the job to do.
Right.
And you would be the best qualified for it.
And the surprising thing to me was when I started looking for help, for someone to help bring this whole story to light so that I could tell the world
uh-huh.
about it, doors that are normally closed to the average screenwriter or, you know, author have just opened up for me. It's unbelievable.
Uh-huh.
You know? And I'm sure, like I said, I'm very lucky. I have so many spirits guiding me.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not afraid. There's, you know, and sometimes, I mean, I've seen so many things. There's so much we have to talk about when we finally meet.
Yeah.
I've had so many different experiences in my life.
Well, you never know. I might be down there next weekend.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah. Well, I want to get down there before it gets cold.
Yeah, and you know, we're getting ready to. I'm getting ready to go really big time with this.
Uh huh.
And
Well, now remember, Geraldo.
Well, they're
he
telling
used
me
the underground tunnels,
they,
too.
They're
yeah.
telling me that this is bigger than the Hereldal thing.
Oh, for sure. For
that's
sure.
what I've uncovered.
Yeah.
And Troy Taylor, an author who's interested in writing a book about my work and, you know, what I've been doing, he's the one who gave Hereldal the information
yeah.
to help him do that thing in 19.
Well, you see, Hereldal, he used that, you know, because he figured, you know, that would make him, you
right.
know.
Right, but you know what?
It, but he failed.
Right, but
you know, but the thing, well, and you know, the thing was, you know, Geraldo failed to see where the real treasure lied,
right.
because it wasn't in the cache to be found. What it was in the discovery of this whole underground tunnel system.
Right,
and Geraldo didn't get it, so
right.
he missed the opportunity.
And so, right, like I've had people from the New York Times that are starting to correspond, and
mm-hmm.
you know. I'm shying away from, like, the National Enquirer or anything like
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right now I want to get the credibility out there.
Yeah, yeah.
But I have heard from the National Enquirer also.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm trying to do right now is get their stories out there. You know, and this is the treasure. It's
exactly.
Incredible.
Yeah, yeah. And like I said, Geraldo missed it.
Right. And they're telling me in Hollywood that this could be bigger than the Geraldo thing he did because he didn't find anything. And I think, personally, it's because he wasn't looking in the right place.
Well, he found it, but he just didn't.
He
just didn't see it because
right.
that it was the tunnel system itself
right.
that is the treasure.
Absolutely.
Because
and now
I mean, to prove that there's an underground tunnel system around the world, interconnected to all these major cities.
Right.
Well, not even major cities, small ones too, because Burlington isn't that big; it's only 10,000 people.
Right.
But, I mean, you can see this whole town is catacombed with these tunnel systems. And everyone, and all the old speakeasies, you know, that was here were, you know, they got the underground tunnels running
absolutely.
Under them. And Capone was using them to distribute the liquor. So, basically, all a person had to do was find out where he was living because it's always his homes had the underground tunnels. Another thing they had to do is look for the old speakeasies, then the old brothel. Oh, yeah, and the breweries, right. Yeah.
Right.
And see, we have the brewery here, Malthouse Theater.
Right, yes. Yeah. I found that one. Even before I found out about you, I'd found out that there was a tunnel that I'm working at in Thornton, Illinois, that I can prove now. Before, it was just myth. But now, I can prove that 10 men died at that location, and it's more people than the St. Valentine's Day Massacre.
Yeah.
So we're about to rewrite history
uh-huh.
with my research here. It's
yeah.
really exciting for me. And, you know, that's my reward there. You know, all this time I've made money and research I've invested, is that's my paycheck right there.
Well, you know, Geronimo used to, he knew of the underground tunnel systems, and when they'd be chasing him up in the Superstition Mountain area, he would take his a group with him of warriors, and they would disappear into the rocks, and, you know, and they would surround that whole area and just think that they could wait him out. Well, the next thing they knew, they would hear word that he was down in New Mexico. Well, Superstition Mountains is in Arizona. And lo and behold, that's where he'd be, is in New Mexico. Well, you see, he knew that how these underground tunnels worked. And so he'd be able to take the tunnel system from Arizona and go all the way into another state. Well, lo and behold, that same tunnel system, we found out, actually goes all the way down into South America. And from South America, it takes off again.
Right. And, you know, it's really odd that I'm finding that different people, I'm contacting the Underground Railroad museums and websites and whatnot, and they all look at it from different aspects, just as I was until I had, you know, talked to you.
And the problem with working with the Historical Society is they are, you know, so one-sided on it.
Absolutely.
You know, that, you know, if it doesn't go past, they don't want it to go before the Underground Railroad, and they don't want to do anything afterwards. You
right.
know, so it's... They just take that one little piece of history,
right?
Box it into a nice, neat little package, put a bow around it, and say that's it. And
well,
it's not.
I'm starting to blow some horns and starting to turn some heads and
good
say,
"Good for you, girl."
This has got to be different.
Yeah.
Because they're not looking at the Al Capone aspect, where that's where I started.
Uh huh.
They've been just researching all these safe houses.
Yeah.
And you know, Harriet Tubman connection. And after I spoke with you, because I've already had the work right in front of me and already did the work. I just drew lines like a big old map,
uh-huh.
and put so much together. They've got their heads spinning.
Really,
I have
good
more information than the Thornton Historical Society, which is the home of Widow McCleary.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, the mayor.
Now, that Widow McCleary, that, if I remember that right, that's a, what is it? That's like
it's a bar.
Pardon?
Okay, it's a bar now.
And you can go down into the basement, right, and there is an underground tunnel system.
Right, and it's on the brewery, so where the brewery was.
Yeah, and they still allow people to go down there. But right down there, it only goes so far, and then it's sealed off, right?
Right.
And that's how the Malthouse Theater is, too.
Right, but I'd love to come to your location. Then we also have another one that not very few people have been in, you know, and that's the one where the people were put in with the bear.
Yeah.
And it's on the other side. Then there's another one that I haven't been able to gain access to because there was heavy equipment there.
Uh-huh.
The last few times I was there, but from what I've told, it's cleaned. It's already been cleared out, and I've already gotten permissions from everybody that I have to, you know, including the city, the owner of the property, the woman who runs the bar. So all I have to do is give them a day or two notice. I get keys, and I'm allowed to go in.
Uh-huh.
Of course, there's a waiver what you'll have to sign. So that if you get hurt or you lose any, you know, anything, they're not responsible.
Well, I think one of the reasons the towns don't want the people knowing about the underground tunnels is, like, let's say, for instance, a person wanted to rob something.
Right.
And, you know, if they knew how these underground tunnels worked, I mean, you know, they could just go from one into another and go up through the floors or whatever.
Right, and that's why some people are asking me now, aren't you afraid, Tony? You're uncovering a big jar of worms. You've opened up a jar of worms and... but I can't let it go, Mary.
That, and I'm going to be meeting with her, I think, darn it, I won't be able to get, well, maybe I can. But anyhow, I'm going to be meeting with her again soon, but, she did that research on the underground tunnels of Whitewater, and, you know, she was actually able to find a place that she could get down in there, and boy, she was just, cobwebs, you know, and everything
right.
else
it's
when she came back out.
Okay,
it's a dirty job, but the thing was, you know, the chamber there, you know, the Historical Society, they were not happy about her exposing it, and you know, and they deny it. They say no, they're not there, even though she's got the physical evidence to prove that it is.
Right.
And like I got the physical evidence, you got the physical evidence.
Right.
But you go talk to the town, you talk to the police. It's like, no, it's not.
The story that Thornton denies the 10 bears. You know that Capone, 10 people died there, and you know, I've went as far as to dig up newspaper archives. I have more information than the woman who runs the Thornton Historical Society.
Yeah.
And I don't run a historical society. I'm just a person that started off as a hobby, and then it became an obsession because I've been guided by the other side.
Yeah.
And I have proof. I can put names. I've dug up ownership paperwork to find out who owned the buildings and what times, and been able to put names with, you know, organized crime and Al Capone with that building. Then I found the article, the newspaper articles, that when they found the 10 men and the bear, the remains of 10 men and the bear in the cave.
Uh-huh.
So, it's, you know, she can deny it all she wants. She just didn't do her homework.
Yeah, exactly.
Now you have the proof. And now she said... Now, Sharon from Widow McCleary...
Well, for one thing, it's very embarrassing to the Historical Society because, I mean, that is supposed to be their job, right?
Right.
To know the history. And
right.
For somebody else to come along and find, you know, and to expose something that they wasn't even aware of, you know, it's got to be kind of like a, you know, sore eye to them, you know, black
right.
spot.
And Sharon from Widow McCleary's owner has been getting... She got some threatening letters, anonymous letters, after we went public with her underground entrance. And saying, if you're going to tell the story, Sharon, tell it correct. The bones are still in the wall. They were scared, you know, when they found them. And this person claims they put the bones back in there because it's like a grave. They didn't want to disturb it.
Right. Yeah, I can understand.
And sealed back off in there.
Yeah.
And they're saying, well, if you're going to tell the story, tell it correctly. And then she got another one. I'm not exactly sure what the second one said, but she told me she was pretty much convinced it was coming from the woman who was the director of the Thornton Historical Society. She's embarrassed. She's mad and upset. But when we were there with Blue Ghost Productions and a filming crew, she could have been a part of it. I contacted her. She was too busy.
Uh-huh.
So the second person in charge led us into the Historical Society, and the camera started rolling, and we got interviews and artifacts, and I did a press release. So I got people who lived in the area coming out, bringing me photos. And, you know, stuff we could put with time to fill the blank and prove it. You know, and so I guess maybe if it was a big embarrassment to her, maybe that's why she's rejected this whole, you know, just tried to make it seem like an urban legend, when true, it's a fact. And it can be proved. You know. I don't know why, you know, unless she was embarrassed. She didn't know, like you said, Mary. She must not have just, because she was embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't want to say, okay, well, I didn't know about this. I overlooked this. Whatever the case is, a chapter of history is going to be rewritten with Chicago organized crime in these underground tunnels. And the way it's looking, there's this work with the underground tunnels. There's people interested in doing this. You know, there's people interested in a movie idea of it, and then there's people who are interested in who just want to get the truth out there, like us, and have the true passion. And but I'm finding there's very few of us, but they're out there.
Well, you know, in the they say that in the end days all things shall be revealed, and we are going into a new paradigm where, you know, all truth is being revealed. So I mean, everything that was hidden is coming to the surface, including these underground tunnels.
Right, and there's so much they don't know about them. I mean, because a lot of people thought, you know, think Al Capone, underground tunnels. Well, you know, he didn't dig the tunnels. It didn't, you know. Some people, you know, actually, I don't know if they really thought that, but until someone brings it to their attention, he didn't. They were there. He used them. If he would have dug the tunnels, he would have never been able to use them.
Uh-huh.
You know, they were there long before him. So there's a lot of history and a lot of things that have happened in those tunnels. You know, and that's why they're so haunted. Every tunnel entrance has tales. And they're true. And I believe that every reported, you know, paranormal activity at these locations, I believe every bit of it, because they're just crying out from the grave. You know, they died there. They lived there. Some of them probably died making the tunnels themselves.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, what we're going to do is put another person on the show that I wanted to share the show with you. He has several books out, and one is, it might be right up your alley, it's Ghost Hunting in Illinois.
Wow.
Okay, so I'm going to get in touch with him, and you just hold on right now. Don't hang up or anything.
Okay.
I'm just going to get him on the line and connect you, okay?
Okay.
Okay, hold on. Antoinette?
Yes, I'm
yes, Antoinette Dykus, this is John Kajuba. How do you spell your, pronounce
Kajuba.
It?
Kajuba. Think of it.
Kajuba.
Cheese.
Yeah, Kajuba.
Hi, Antoinette.
And John has the book out, Ghost Hunting Illinois. And then, thank you for the books. I received them.
Yeah,
you have Ghost Hunting Illinois as well as Ghost Hunting Ohio.
Right, which came out last year. Ghost Hunting Illinois is only literally 2 weeks old. It's brand new.
Yeah, and now I thought that it'd be interesting because this is our Paranormal Saturday show that we do every Saturday, and so I thought that you guys would be a good pair to put together. You know,
yeah, I know all about his Ohio book.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, my daughter just graduated from law school. She was at the University of Cincinnati.
Oh, sure.
And yes, he's a corporate attorney with a master's degree, and I've been doing my research for about 10 years. And one of her classmates had, you know, mentioned your book, and my daughter, of course, my mom has an interest and does research, so I was able to hear all about your book.
Okay.
And now, John's, first of all, now, let's see, as far as of right now, Antoinette does not have a website, otherwise I would have given you her website.
Yeah, it'll be up by next week, by the end of next weekend.
Okay, so when you get it, let me know, and I'll put it up on our website where your show will be, okay? So that people will have that link. But John does have a website, and it's John Kajuba. Did I say that right?
Yes, you did.
Okay, johnkajuba.com. That's John, K-A-C-H-U-B-A. So it'd be J-O-H-N-K-A-C-H-U-B-A.com.
Right.
Okay. And So we were first of all, John, tell us a little bit about your book, and then we'll go into what we were talking about.
Sure. And actually, I was listening into the program just a few minutes ago, and I heard talk about Widow McCleary.
Yes.
So we'll get into that, because I actually have a chapter about Widow McCleary's in Ghost Hunting, Illinois. But Ghost Hunting, Illinois is the second book in a series that is called the Haunted Heartland series, published by Emmis Books. And I wrote Ghost Hunting, Ohio last year. Ghost Hunting, Illinois, as I said, is the second one. And in each of these books, what I did was I traveled through both states, both Ohio, where I live, and through Illinois, and I stopped at maybe 30 different locations, probably, for each book. And I spent some time there. I talked to the people that owned the places or had experiences there. If it was a place that I could stay, like a hotel or something, I would stay overnight and try to, you know, really get the flavor of the place. So each one I went to personally, and I talked to people, and then I just wrote up my experiences. And in the back of the book of each one is sort of a little, I'll call it kind of a travel index, because each one of these places are open to the public. I don't write about anything that the public actually can't go and investigate for themselves. So I thought that's kind of nice. So they're sort of, you know, ghost travel books in a way. And these are the first two in the series. Next year, in fall of 2006, will be a third book in the series, but it's going to be called Ghost Hunter. And it's going to be a little bit of a departure in that it's not going to be necessarily restricted to any particular state. It's going to be national in scope. And it's going to talk about a lot of things besides hauntings. It's going to talk about just a lot of different sort of aspects of the paranormal, but always related to ghosts specifically. So that's sort of what the series is about. And it's I've had a lot of fun writing it.
Yeah, it sounds very interesting. Through my research, I've made connections. As Mary says, there's people who claim there's tunnels all the way to Florida.
Right. And as far as up as Moose Jaw.
Yeah, and then they go
Canada.
To Canada, and
right.
they want to share their stories, and they're all looking for a place to get together and let's network this. And so,
well, that's what I thought too. If I'm going to be going to Illinois to meet with you, maybe we could meet with John as well, and we could all kind of get together and do something, you know, as far as an investigation of the tunnels there.
Right, and like I said, I have two other speakeasies that we could go to that have been there. And they're sealed off, but they're all unique in their own way.
Now, where are you located at? You live in Athens, Ohio, don't
Ohio.
You, John?
I'm a little way from
Oh,
there.
Okay, yeah, okay, yeah.
But I do get out there from time to time.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, when I heard about the Widow McCleary story from Antoinette there, and it was interesting, because I had been there, I guess, probably last spring or summer, I think, and I had talked to Sharon and Mo there, the owners, and you know, we went down into the tunnel that Antoinette was talking about actually it's a spring, it's an artesian well.
Right.
An old artesian well, and that was kind of interesting. I didn't know about any other tunnels. They didn't tell me about any other tunnels there besides that one.
Right, and that's what I said. That is the one that I made public that you went down into with Richard Crow and Blue Ghost Productions. We went with the film crew, and we had a couple psychics come down and, you know, check the place out. Then there's the other part of the brewery where another business operates. I have permissions from the owner. We've been in there. And there is another entrance where the 10 men were sealed in with the bear. And then another one that I've never been able to get access to. And there's rumors that there's treasures and all kinds of stuff down there in that one. And I also have permission to, you know, the whole grounds. But as for the tours that Richard Crow gives, and, you know, people who come out and want to write a piece, they normally just to go to the one where the artesian well is.
Right.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that there's an artesian well there, because that indicates to me that it's sacred ground.
Yes.
Because that would be not, that would be primary water coming up through there.
Right.
And, you know, that the Indians would look at that as healing water.
Right. And as for Sharon, we had a little bit of a disagreement just less than a month ago, because I told her I want to protect this private well and that property there, and so it's undisturbed. And she said the owner of the building itself does not want it to become historic. And I said he doesn't really have a choice, because once the Native Americans, it's got to be just exactly the way you said it, Mary. It has to be sacred ground because of that artesian well.
It has to be.
And once this goes public, like it's developing right now, he's not going to have a choice. And it's not going to cost him anything. It pays. They're just, you know, they'll pay him. He'll get money from the government. You know, I've already done the research. The librarians have been very helpful out here, helping me pull up the paperwork, you know, for people to get money for, you know, identification and protection. And then the owners, you know, like if, say, you discovered something in one of your books, John,
mm-hmm.
you can get my government money. All you have to do is apply for it for the identification and protection, even though you don't own the property. And the owner then doesn't have to do any of the work. You've done all the work for them.
Right.
All they have to do is apply for the money, so for protection. Then they can get more money if they want to preserve it.
We had somebody contact us right now, and they wanted to me to elaborate a little bit on these underground tunnels where, you know, on my website, they want the website, you know, so they can make the connection here. So go to burlingtonnews.net/tunnels, T-U-N-N-E-L-S. And from that point on, you could be able to understand how I'm connecting all this paranormal with the underground tunnels. And so it's burlingtonnews.net/tunnels.
Absolutely, I can see how the connection came in with your site, your website, because there are so haunted. Don't you agree, Jen?
Well, I think they are. And to be honest, I've come across tunnels in Ohio and Illinois, but not to the extent that either of you have investigated those. I've been investigating primarily structures and, you know, places that have had hauntings, not so much tunnels. But yeah, I mean, I think they're very common. And I think it's interesting that, I guess, Mary, you had mentioned the brewery in Wisconsin there that has one. And I can understand that because so many of these breweries, like McCleary's, for instance, was built as a brewery in 1876. And the reason why it was built there was because there was an artesian well right there. So he had a source of fresh water from which to brew beer.
Right. You know, I never made the connection.
Yeah. No, I did. And they also said about that land, the Indians let them build on that land.
Right, that's right. There was
Indians. Because I had to dig up all, when I was in my historical records, to prove anything with that location, I had to go back into the very first owners of it.
Well, just to show you how elaborate these tunnels really are, John, and Antoinette, is the fact that the tunnels could not possibly have been made just for the Underground Railroad, because during the time of the Underground Railroad, if you look at the surface of the tunnels, they were dirt. The sidewalks were made out of, most of the sidewalks then were just wood plank sidewalks. But when you get down into these underground tunnels, and you've got some elaborate stonework.
Right.
And it doesn't make sense that, you know, you're going to be spending all your time down there doing elaborate stonework, mm-hmm. and you're not taking care of the city streets up on the surface where everybody's using it.
Mm-hmm.
And we found that these underground tunnels actually go under the rivers,
yeah.
like where the brewery is here in town. That one goes down, it's underneath the brewery, but then it goes down underneath that river and then takes off again across town.
Right. Well, McCleary's also goes under a spring. There's a big creek that runs, it's pretty big length of Illinois, and it's called Thorn Creek, and that tunnel goes underneath the creek.
Yeah, and we've got another tunnel system over there about 20 miles from us, and it also goes underneath our river. And so, you know, whoever these masons were that built these tunnels, they really knew what they were doing, because that takes some thought, you know, and you know, to put a tunnel that's going to stand up underneath the river.
Sure. I had heard, I mean, like I said, this is not an area in which I profess to know a whole lot, but I had heard once before about sort of a system through North America primarily of you know, naturally occurring tunnels because of porous rock being run through by water and all. And one explanation of Bigfoot and why it appears in the Northwest, and actually why it's appeared in Southeast Ohio, actually like right in the area in which I live, people have said, well, they've been living in these tunnels and going for miles and miles and miles from one destination to another simply by using these underground tunnels that have been made naturally.
But doesn't that make sense, though, John?
Sure. I mean, I'm sure that there's all types of underground tunnels, and, you know, I'm sure. And somebody could easily go in there and
well, besides that, the tunnels lead into elaborate caverns.
Mm-hmm.
You
right.
know, I mean, and of course, we've all heard the stories of Shambhala and Argada, you know, these underground cities. You know, the Mayans had the underground cities. You hear about it in Tibet. They've found them here in the United States. And so who knows what type of people are living in these underground cities now.
Right.
They could be like a Bigfoot. Who knows? Until we can get actually down there, mm-hmm. As far as I'm concerned, if we ever went down there, we'd be violating their territory. So we'd be the invaders.
Right. That's something that I've looked at too, because that's a goal of mine, where I found the shoes of the slaves. You know, I know we can gain access very easily into that, to go all the way in that tunnel.
Uh-huh.
I thought, who would I be violating if I did get the permissions and get
well, if there's people living down there. I mean, these entities that are not like us, because we really don't know, do we? I mean, what's going on down there? And I've always thought, okay, like John, for example. I did a show today with WPDR AM 1350 out of Portage, and we were talking about the spectrum of reality, and I was telling him that we only take in 5%, of what's really going on around us in our reality, 5%. Science takes on, can add 10% to that. So, I mean, you've got, 15% there. 85% is unknown to us.
Mm-hmm.
85%, there's things happening that we don't see. That's going on around us all the time. People, that's maybe living in a higher vibration than we are, such as, our spirits. People talk about aliens, but I'm also talking about entities like Bigfoot, maybe the fairy world, trolls, things like that, that have come out of our old fairy tale legends, but the thing is, we say that they don't exist because we can't see them. But if we only take in by sight only 5% of what the total reality really consists of.
Right.
I mean, that's leaving a whole lot out there. And I've always wondered if, like with your ghost stories that you have, how many of these stories have you heard, they feel like a breeze going by them, they feel like somebody touching them at the back of their neck, or they'll be sitting there and something will just fly across the room.
Peripheral vision.
Yeah, peripheral vision. We catch things out of the corner of your eye. Well, we really don't know. We write it off as ghosts because that's the only thing that we can possibly think they could be, because there's 85% of the unknown, so we just kind of like take it and catalog it, take it as ghosts. But there could be a lot of things, a lot of entities that's living right with us, just in a higher vibration that our eyes can't pick up.
I think you're right, Mary. If you look at even just some of the biological and physiological point of view, if you look at the human brain, we can really only map out a very small percentage of it and identify what each little section does. Okay, this one controls fingers, this one controls vision, this one controls memory. We can map out a very small portion, but most of the brain remains really just a blank. We don't know what it does. We don't know the purpose that it serves. And to my mind, I think that that might be where so much of this, I'll just say psychic abilities, for lack of a better word, but I think that's where much of that might reside, and we don't know it. And I think that that's why some people can say, oh, I'm very sensitive to spirits, I see ghosts all the time, or whatever it might be, because they may be somehow capable of tapping into that part of the brain that controls that ability,
mm-hmm.
And maybe on a subconscious level or an unconscious level, maybe they don't even know how they do it. But why is it that I've been on many investigations, as you probably have too, where one person might see something in a room where five or six people are standing and nobody else sees it?
Well, all the time.
Or hear it, right, or feel it. And so I'm wondering, what that's about. People say they're more sensitive, but what does that actually mean? Does it mean that they just tapped into some ability? First of all, I think that we all have some innate ability to be on that sort of psychic realm.
Absolutely.
Well,
yeah.
take for instance people that have near-death experiences.
Mm-hmm.
They had no psychic abilities whatsoever. They have the near-death experience, and boom, they come back, and all of a sudden, they're seeing things.
Mm-hmm.
They're hearing things. Well, right. That would kind of go with what you said, John.
Absolutely.
You know, that it might activate a certain part of the brain that had, at that point in time, before the near-death experience, had laid there dormant.
Well, you know, I think of like, early man, going way back to, you know, caveman, for lack of, you know, a better term, specifically which one, I don't know, Neanderthal, doesn't matter, but caveman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how was a small group of guys with wooden spears, you know, able to track down animal herds that were migrating over hundreds and hundreds of miles?
Mm-hmm.
How did they know when they were going to be at a certain time, you know, at a certain time of year, when the mastodon was going to pass through? How did they know that? How did they know where to be, how to catch these animals or whatever? And I think, and this, you know, I have no scientific basis for this other than just pure conjecture, but I think that there was probably, again, a sensitivity to nature, to surroundings, to being able to communicate in a sense with the natural world, with animals.
Well, there has
to
be
to survive.
Well, it has to be something because you know, it's been shown that a dog will set when that person gets off work, you know,
right.
And they're driving home. The dog has picked up on it and is sitting there at the window waiting for them to get home.
Right.
And
so,
I mean, they're not using no clock either to do it.
Exactly. Just like the cavemen weren't using, you know, GPS to figure out when the mastodons were coming through, and they weren't listening to radio forecasts saying, you know, by next Wednesday, the herd should be through here. You know,
yeah.
They had to rely on their own senses to figure that out for pure survival. And I think what's happened to modern man is, you know, over the centuries, thousands of years, the more we accumulate technology, the more we rely on pushing a button rather than sort of thinking things through, the further and further we're getting away from sort of that innate ability that we have to connect with the natural world, with other beings, with animals, you know, whatever. We're relying more and more on science to guide us, to direct us, to control our life. And so we're losing, I think, whatever ability we have.
Well, you hear a lot about third world countries being attacked by spirits, you know, influenced.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and a lot of people say, well, that's because, you know, they don't have any, you know, they haven't brought Christ into their world, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But I think what it really is what you said, they're not reliant on technology. So they're more tuned into the natural forces, the elementals. And,
right.
And because of their awareness, it brings them closer to that spirit world connection. And sometimes they, you know, they have, you know, good experiences. Sometimes, you know, they got the bad because there's both out there in that spirit realm.
Right, exactly. I teach part-time here at Ohio University here in Athens. I teach, you know, writing on a part-time basis. But there's a person at the faculty here now, a South African writer, who has come here about 2 years ago. And, you know, very educated person, PhD and everything else, a great writer, great novelist and playwright. And he talks about tribal South Africa. He's a black South African, and he would say that, you know, the spirit world for them is not anything that people disbelieve. It's so much ingrained with their everyday waking lives. They don't even make a distinction between, say, spirit and you know, flesh and blood human beings.
Yeah.
They just accept that it's a part of their life. And that, you know, here's a guy with a PhD, but he's still in touch with those roots, and I don't think he's, you know, lost that ability. It's every day. It's not anything unusual.
And I really do think that those people have an advantage over us because of the fact that, you know, they, to me, they've got the right way of thinking. Because I really don't believe that when a person, when they die, I hate using the word die, but, you know, for the sake of the show, I will.
Mm-hmm.
But when they die, they think that they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
But I totally believe that all they do is they just the conscious cannot be destroyed. Energy cannot be destroyed.
Right.
And when a person sheds the body, they just step over into this other plane. And I think that they have to, in order to get to that plane, they have to go through. They have to be ethereal in order to do it. Etheric. you know, to do it. Mm-hmm. And that's once they get into that plane, then they manifest into another physical body. I guess that's a, you know, more like the ancient Egyptians believed, you know.
Yeah.
But to me, it makes sense, and that's the reason a ghost never knows they're dead, because
right.
of the fact that when they look at their body, they're seeing a physical body.
Right.
But then when they're trying to communicate with the plane that they just left, because they're at a higher vibration, they can't communicate, and then they don't understand how come no one's listening to them,
mm-hmm.
until it finally sinks into them that they crossed over,
mm-hmm.
and that the body that they have now, it can't be seen by, you know, the people in the you know, on the 3D plane.
Right.
You know?
Absolutely. I was raised Catholic, okay, and then once these I don't know if they're visions, but once I started tapping into this gift that I had that I didn't know I had, mm-hmm. I was afraid to explore it. I didn't understand. Grave marker, they say rest in peace. Or some people say when they die, they go to straight to heaven. Okay, then the Bible says that there's a time where God will come and judge the living and the dead.
Yeah.
So, obviously, all throughout mankind, they've known that there's a plane in between life and death.
Yeah.
There's this in-between that exists. But don't,
yeah, well, you know, yeah, that's how I believe too, and I think that because he's judging them both is because they're both still existing.
Right, because if they rest in peace, well, then they're resting. If they haven't gone to heaven, that spirit's somewhere. It, you know, it's out there somewhere, you know, in between, even the, you know, the Catholics.
And I imagine that's where that's where we're picking up on our ghost stories.
Right. Well,
and that's where you come in, John, because like I said, told the listeners, you just put your new book out, and you know, A Ghost Hunting Illinois, and so you've got some great stories, I imagine, from your investigations of Illinois.
Well, yeah, you know, it's in Chicago, especially. Is Anton? Are you in Chicago?
Yes, I am.
You are, okay. I mean, Chicago is a great area, and I know you mentioned Troy Taylor earlier, and I've worked with Troy on a few different things as well.
Now, Troy has he has a website out there. Since we brought his name up,
right.
What is it? What I know it, but I can't think of it.
Prairie Ghost.
Yeah.
Prairie Ghost.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
PrairieGhosts.com, I guess.
Yeah, and he works with another woman, Ursula, who's
Ursula
also got Bielski. Some really good
yeah.
books out.
Well, Troy's done some good work there in Illinois.
Troy's done a lot. I mean, I think he was probably, you know, you're the Pioneer State, right? So, no, Prairie State, I'm sorry. Who's the Pioneer State? I don't even know. But he's sort of a pioneer, I think, in Illinois in terms of getting a lot of the work done out there. But I found a couple of new places that I don't think anybody had written about in Illinois. I might be wrong, but... there was a place down in Grafton, which is not too far from Alton. It's right on the Mississippi, I guess. There's a state park there called Pere Marquette State Park. And my wife and I had actually been in Grafton to investigate the Rubel Hotel, which you may have heard about. It's in Grafton, and that's haunted by a little girl named Abigail. And I could talk about that in a second. But it's funny, we spent the night in the hotel. The next day we were on our way out. We'd heard that at the state park, which is only a couple miles up the road, that this was in December, and all the eagles come, American, you know, the bald eagles come and winter over there. So we wanted to see that. We thought it'd be pretty great. So we drove up there, and we went to the visitor center, and I was talking to a park ranger there, and I said to him, just in conversation, that I was writing a book about ghosts. And he said, oh, so that's why you're here. And I said, well, that's why I'm in Illinois. What do you mean here? He said, no, that's why you're here at Pere Marquette. I said, no, I'm here to see the eagles. He said, I thought you were here to see our ghost. So it turns out that the lodge was haunted. And this kind of thing has happened very strangely, too, where I've been, I heard you talking about being directed before
right.
by spirits.
I believe that.
Well, I think in a lot of ways these books have been, because there's been several places where I had no idea, and by pure dumb luck or by accident sometimes, I end up in a place where there's something going on. But this lodge was interesting. It has the spirit of an elderly man who's dressed in a Civil War uniform, who's been seen a few times in the restaurant area as well as sort of in their big, they have a huge, huge lobby, like 80-foot high ceilings, and it's just unbelievable. But apparently there was, at one point during the Civil War, a small encampment, I guess, probably to guard the river or something, is my guess, wasn't much. But they don't know who this person was, but he's been seen by a few people there. But there's also been, they've seen sort of peripheral vision, again, corner ghosts, as they sometimes call them, you know, out of the corner of your eye, literally going by doorways and things at night when there wasn't anybody else in the building except just the night manager, night desk manager. They've had doors opening and closing, two sets of doors. Actually, this is interesting. In the lobby, they have two sets. They have an outer door, which is a heavy, heavy glass door that you have to push from a bar inside. You enter a small vestibule, and there's another set of doors that are just as heavy. And the night clerk was there one night when both doors suddenly blew open, just like, you know, both sets of doors blew open and closed. But they did it from, these doors only open from the inside. You push the bar from the inside, so it couldn't have been the wind from outside opening them. So they've had things like that going on. That's a good place, I think, for somebody to spend some time and do a little more investigation. I wasn't there too long, but I got some pretty great stories from that, I thought.
Well, don't you think it's interesting? Well, my alarm went up when you said that this is a special place that the Eagles always come back to.
Mm-hmm.
Because it goes back to watching wildlife, back to watching nature,
mm-hmm.
to find out, you know, what's really going on in this invisible world. That's what I like to call it. But it seems that, you know, that those eagles are attracted to the energy there.
It could be.
I'd also talked to this Cherokee shaman, and he explained it to me like this, that the ley lines, you know, the energy lines of Earth, is actually also a highway for spirits to
right.
travel. And so, like, if a person built their home on an energy point, these spirits would be going through there all the time.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I live in Athens, Ohio, which is a small community, very small community. If the university weren't here, there'd be nobody here. But it's in the extreme southeast corner of the state. It's in Appalachian, Ohio. Very rural, a lot of played-out mines, that kind of thing. But for centuries, this had been considered a sacred area for the Shawnee, who was the modern tribe through here. And then even before them, their predecessors, the mound builders, here they call them the Hopewell, but they could have been any one of a number of different mound-building tribes.
Uh-huh.
But we have all kinds of Indian mounds around the area here. But apparently, several ley lines cross right in Athens.
Right.
And so the Indians had always considered it to be an area of great power. They considered it a sacred area. They didn't camp here. They would come to visit and perform various, you know, religious or rituals or whatever, but they never had a permanent camp here. They always considered it too sacred of a place to do that.
Well, besides that,
my grandfather said about Lock Village having, you know, we lived on, you know, ancient burial grounds that was like a passing zone for all kinds of spiritual, you know, he said that we should be able to feel something because we live on sacred ground.
Yeah.
And just like you said, it was like a highway passing through for spirits.
Well, you see, that's where the idea of the cross comes from, is because you've got your vertical ley lines and your horizontal ley lines coming through. And where they cross over is like taking a battery, you know, like these battery cables.
Mm-hmm.
And you put one end of a battery cable to another battery cable, and you get that big charge, that big burst of energy, you know, that spark.
Right.
And see, that's what's happening where these ley lines cross over. That high energy there does the spark and opens up those portals, and thus opens up those windows into the other worlds. And of course, with them crossing, they're crossing, you know, horizontally, and they're crossing vertically there too. So, you know, I can see the Indians going there to do sacred ceremonies, because what are the sacred ceremonies? They're speaking to their ancestors, right?
Sure.
And but they would know better than turn around and put a tent there, because I mean, gosh only knows what. Would, you know, they know what would happen to them. I mean,
right.
They're going to, they could end up with all sorts of problems.
Right. Well, I spent some time in Ghost Hunting, Ohio. I guess this came out last year. I do have a chapter on the Athens area, of course, where I live. And you talk about the ley lines. But in addition to that, I guess in the early, mid-19th century, when the Fox sisters up in upstate New York sort of started this spiritualism movement, only a couple years after they became popular, a man set up a spiritualist tabernacle, I guess is what they call it, or temple, here in Athens on actually a little mountain called Mount Nebo, just like from the Bible. And for many years, it was a very popular spiritualist place. It was, you know, it was kind of internationally, or at least nationally, renowned. People came from all over to watch musical instruments floating around in this room and to hear voices and to have automatic writing and all these other things that were going on in this place. So it's interesting that that happened here, along with the ley lines and everything else. You know, so it even goes beyond Native American culture. I think anybody tuned in to that spiritual aspect, you know, understands that and says, wow, this is a place where something is happening.
Right, you know? Spiritual realm, because the area I'm from that I'm talking about was in the 70s and early 80s was known, because there's a lot of forest preserve area, where there was different religious groups out there doing sacrifices on animals.
Mm.
There was overwhelming. That's part of the area I wanted to take Mary to, where they're sacrificing just, there are hundreds of animals, you know, in of years' time. There was all kinds of, and they were trying to break these up, and they even have a different kind of church out here, you know, and Satan worship, whatnot, you know, it's black, and all the stuff you see in the movies.
Sure.
You know, but this whole area that I'm from, you know, it's been known for the spiritual vibe. That's why people have gone to the woods and done these ceremonies and done sacrifices with animals, you know, so, and that's long after the Indians.
Yeah, unfortunately, people don't understand the dangers of blood sacrifices. You know, they read a couple books, say, oh, well, that's cool, you know,
right.
And they turn around and let blood. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, that's one of the most dangerous things you can possibly do. It's about as bad as picking up a Ouija board and playing around with it.
Right.
But it does attract the spirits, the blood does, but I wouldn't want to touch it.
Right, I never...
But Burlington, again, the common denominator is the mounds. Because here in Burlington, too, we have all these mounds right here. But we found out, I found out through my research that wherever you find the mounds, the reason that the mounds are actually even built there is because of the fact that there's portals there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're markers to let the people traveling through know that these are areas that they can perform their magical ceremonies, or you know, speak to the dead or whatever they need to do, but
sure.
Do healing. You know, it's a very powerful place, and I've also noticed that as far as the crop circles go, you know, the authentic ones, not the hoaxed ones,
right.
But the authentic crop circles, we have found always. There was one that was in Mayville, Wisconsin, here, not far from, you know, Burlington, and a couple of years ago, 2001, I believe it was. Boy, how time flies, huh? But anyhow, we went there and to do an investigation of it, and I told Brad, I says, well, Brad, I says, let's look for the mounds. And I says, let's look for mounds and effigy mounds. And I says, I can almost guarantee you that we're going to find them right here. And sure enough, all around there was effigy mounds. So the crop circles, the real ones, too, are, I believe, are markers, you know, for these portals that the spirits are going in and out of. And I believe that not only do the spirits use them, but I believe that they could be used for time travel, interdimensional travel, you know,
it's a very
various
interesting
things.
Theory. I've never heard that.
Yeah.
Well, see, that's what the Indians were always doing. This is spirit walking. It's dimensional travel. You know, I mean, it's things that we have, as Europeans, either have forgotten or we never knew of to start with.
Right.
But I mean, but it's just like we were discussing earlier, you know, as far as the historical society goes, you know, they focus in on one thing, but they don't ask questions of why, you know, so that they go into depth, you know, in their studies of, okay, they know that the tunnels were here, they know that the Underground Railroad used them, so okay, end of story. But they don't ask, well, why were these tunnels here? Who made them? And then if they turn around and look, you know, compare the streets above to what they're finding below, they'll know that there was no way that these were built specifically for. I mean, my God, there couldn't have been that many slaves fleeing, you know,
right,
to make
right.
all these tunnels. I mean, you know, because, I mean, these tunnels are set up, I mean, you know, that, you know, you've got a mass transportation system down there.
Right. Sure. With my research, I've been asking that why and how. And I've been able to uncover. I believe that's why Widow McCleary's had so many entrances, because they were quarrying the limestone in Thornton, Illinois. There's a huge quarry. Mm-hmm. Where they were,
well, and there again, you got there. There you got another common denominator of the quarry, because what's quarry? Mostly the quarries that you find around here do contain crystal quartz in them.
Mm-hmm. And so
poor grade, but still crystal.
Right.
Transmission
right digging
there.
Here, but that's why there's so many entrances, because it goes to the other catacombs that Mary speaks of in her books. You know, the other entrances are all connected to that, I'm sure. But the one that the artesian well is, I believe that one is connected to the drilling for the limestone. And that's why that one's remained untouched and open that way.
Well, I'm sure that there are fake or hidden doorways. And it seems like you've hit on it with your work, because we are looking at this as mortar, when in actuality it's not mortar at all. It's some sort of a material that can actually be dug out of there quite easily, and and get into the next tunnel system. So yeah, very interesting.
And the exciting part is this new chapter that I've just discovered will allow us. I am positive, because the cobwebs are even blowing. I was absolutely filthy when I was doing my investigation for the day. I think I spent a good 8 hours there.
Mm-hmm.
When I removed what I thought was mortar, and it just came off. I assumed it was mud and flour. I'm no forensic scientist, you know, but very easy to remove. I didn't even need a key. You can see the cobwebs blowing. So this will take us in deeper than I've ever been in any tunnel. You know, but I question.
The name of your website, and then of course both of you guys' books, okay? And who wants to start first?
Well, I'll jump in.
Okay.
The website is www.johnkachuba.com, and spelled JohnKachuba. But the books, there's two right now: Ghost Hunting Ohio and Ghost Hunting Illinois, and they're available in all the bookstores in Illinois and Ohio. There shouldn't be any problem there. They're also available on the internet at, you know, any of the major internet dealers like Amazon.com or whatever. And Mary, I know you have books on your website, so I guess, I don't know, will they be available for here or not?
Well, sure, we can sell your books on our website as well.
So they're available from, you know, they're easy to get.
Mm-hmm.
Just Ghost Hunting Ohio, Ghost Hunting Illinois. If you do it online, you should. Ghost Hunting is one word. Might make a little bit of a difference, but that's for me.
And my new book isn't out yet, but the title is El Capone: Secrets from the Grave and the Underground Railroad. And it's a walk through my studies over 10 years of different breweries, speakeasies, underground tunnels, and. If we're going to change history when this thing comes out, I'm really excited. I'll have my new website up next week. But if anyone wants to contact me, they can contact me at dreamchasingmom@aol.com. And I'll have a new website up next week. And I'm sure Mary will be one of the first people to post that link for you.
Oh, you betcha. You guys talk for just a second back and forth. I got some people in here. I'll just hold on just a second.
Yeah, John, I'm really excited to explore your new book. It sounds very interesting.
Yeah, thanks. I didn't know about your book. Yours is coming out when?
Well, we're hoping to be out before Christmas.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really exciting right now. Like I said, I thought I was completed, and then I opened a whole jar of worms.
Yeah, yeah.
And now the publisher I'm working with, they want to integrate it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very excited.
That's great.
And so when is your book due out?
Mine is due by Christmas.
Okay. And since we're plugging books, also mine is out now, and it's called Mysteries. It's going to be the first of a series, okay? And this one right now is on the underground tunnels and paranormal of southeastern Wisconsin. And, of course, we touch into Illinois, too, because I'm naturally working, the book touches on El Capone, you know, in the underground tunnels.
warming up to do Wisconsin sometime soon. The Haunted Heartland series wants to do a book for each of the Midwest states, so Wisconsin is pretty much in line. Wisconsin and Michigan should be coming pretty soon.
Oh yeah, but, so
we'll
yeah.
contact you. Maybe.
Well, yeah, it's well, it, the thing is, it's I'm a good person to contact because if
sure.
I know if I'm about one of the leading authorities, I think, on the paranormal in this area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or I should be by now. You know, we also do tours every see, like what after I finish a show like this, I do a tour. So people start coming in about this time of the night, and then we take them out. Yeah, then we take them out into the area. But we use our tours for education,
mm-hmm.
because I want people to understand this invisible world. Because to me, it's so magical, and I want to take the fear out of it and put the more of the wonder into it.
Right.
You know, like
you know, talking about the educational end of it. There's something mentioned before, historical societies, and. And over the past 2 years, as I've been doing these two books, I've obviously had occasion to work with a lot of historical societies, and I find that you get sort of a mixed bag. You know, you get people who don't want to talk about anything that remotely sounds paranormal because it destroys the history or the image. When I was in Springfield, Illinois, for Ghost Hunting Illinois, I was doing some Lincoln stuff. I was at the Lincoln Tomb and the Lincoln House. And you know, you talk to any of the national park rangers there, and all you have to do is say something like, "So, have you seen Lincoln's ghost lately?" You know, and they'll literally escort you out. You know,
so try saying, "Have you seen a UFO?"
Yeah, right. They don't want to talk about it. On the other hand, I mean, to go exactly opposite, I've gone to historical societies who have been extremely helpful, and are interested in ghost stories as well as just the actual history. And for me, I'm very much interested in history. When you talk about educational purposes, both my books, if you start looking through them, you'll see that I really do talk a lot about the history of the place, the people. Because for me, before you start talking about ghost stories, you're talking about his story. You know, there's a history there. We're talking about real people that had real lives, that did real things. And I always want to sort of respect that and remember that. I mean, it's part of who we are. It's part of our culture. It's part of our history.
Yeah.
We don't have to be related to these people by blood, but we are by just being part of, you know, sort of the human condition.
Right.
So I want to remember that all the time, and so I talk about that. And then I certainly talk about the ghost story. But I think taking that approach has helped me with a lot of historical societies or people who are sort of officials, if you know what I mean, who may not feel comfortable about talking about ghost stories, even though they may know them or have even experienced things themselves sometimes. I think taking that approach, when I tell them how much I'm interested in history and want to educate people about the history of the place and everything else as well, that they're more amenable to talk, you know, and
put
the stories out.
Well, and then besides that, you know, these people should realize that it really does boost the economy. I exposed Burlington to what, you know, the truth was. You know, I think a lot of people were ashamed, you know. They didn't want the word out about these ghosts, you know, and the hauntings here in the underground tunnels because they're thinking, oh, well, you know, what's that going to do? People look at us as a bunch of nuts here. But it has really boosted the economy of this little town. I mean, we have people coming in from all the different states, you know. We had people coming in from Kansas, the state of Kansas, just to do a 3-hour tour with us, you know, for their wedding anniversary. But I mean, you know, and all these people, you know, that come into town, they have to stay at a motel, they have to eat, you know. So I mean, you know, every dollar you bring into your town, you know, is a dollar more than they had before. And so, you know, I try to stress this upon the, you know, the town that I'm working with, saying, hey, you know, this is going to help the town. It's not a stigma, you know, that you should be ashamed of. It's something to promote.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We look at some of the big cities, like for instance, Savannah, St. Augustine, Florida, Gettysburg, the battlefield. I mean, some of these places that are so well known and already attract thousands and thousands of tourists are attracting a lot more because they all have really well-organized ghost tours in those areas of their local sites. And And they're, you know, the cities in those areas are getting behind those, and they're helping them and supporting them, and yeah, it's definitely good for the economy.
And it's clean, honest fun. You know, I mean, the people aren't out there drinking and getting in trouble. The kids aren't doing drugs or anything like that. You know, they're actually just getting together. They're having fun. They're learning about nature. They're learning about history of their town. Mm-hmm. The positive so much outweighs the negative when it comes to the investigation of the paranormal.
No, I agree.
And, you know, and what you guys are both doing, I mean, you know, this is wonderful because... it really does help. Because, you know, sooner or later we're all going to have to face the paranormal. You know, we can avoid ghosts all we want to, but, you know, sooner or later, you know, we're all going to have to deal with death.
Right.
And why not prepare oneself for it right now? So that we can be more like our third world countries, you know, that realize that all it is a natural process of life.
Mm-hmm.
And that it does not end, you know, with the shedding of the body.
Right.
Because what we call the ghost, I mean, you know, when a person steps out of their body, they still carry the same personality traits too. So if a person is a cantankerous old man when he was on this earth plane, you're going to run into him, you know, on the other side, you know. Or the other side, you know what I mean? What am I trying to say? When you have a haunting, you may come across somebody that is cantankerous, and you think, oh, well, that person's demonic. No, he's just a cantankerous old man.
Right, that's just who he was.
You know, and a loving person is going to maintain that when they cross over. So you're going to, you know, in dealing with the paranormal, you're going to meet all different personalities there. You can't just kind of like draw a line and say demonic angelic. Demonic angelic, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. When I've been in a frightful situation, I've flat out said, listen, I'm not afraid of you and you're not going to scare me, so let's do this. You know, if you will, let's walk through this and try to talk out loud when I've been in a situation where I felt a little frightened for a couple seconds, you know. And I didn't allow myself to judge and say, well, this is something demonic and I better get the heck out of here.
Well, trust me, there's been a few times I've ran out of those haunted places, you know, with my tail between my legs. you know, and I think I don't think that, if we're going to be truthful, you know, I don't think there's any paranormal research that hasn't gotten scared at one point in time.
No, I was going to say, there's nothing wrong with leaving when you think it's time to leave.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I think that's true.
You know, we all love a good ghost story, and we all go try to find these places. But you know, I think it's great that people are interested now. I think you know, there's more and more of an interest now in the paranormal and books like you guys's than there used to be.
Well, yeah, there really is. And the book that I'm doing next year, as I said, it's going to be a little bit different, called Ghost Hunter. It's going to have, you know, investigations and looking at different places physically, but I'm going to look at a lot of sort of, I don't want to minimize it, but almost pop culture in terms of ghosts, because it is becoming so popular. Look at all the TV shows now that talk about ghosts and ghost hunters and all the tours that, you know, we're all aware of, books that we're all doing here. I mean, people seem to be talking about it more these days than the past. I mean, it's gone in spurts, but right now, I think we're at a high. I think we're at a peak.
Well, because the credibility is, you know, becoming, more people are willing to believe now when psychic detectives are on court TV,
mm-hmm.
helping solve cases. You know, before they say, oh, psychics, they're crazy, and no one wanted to admit if they did think they felt or seen something.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, the psychic detectives, I think, are making people look at psychics a lot different. You know, to not to be afraid of a psychic, or if they might, you know, have, you know, that psychics really even do exist. I think some people have just a whole different outlook now because of the way television portrays things.
Right.
And I think the psychic detectives have helped officials, you know, believe that, hey, you know, there is something there that we can't see and we can't explain, but that they're solving crimes with the help of psychics nowadays.
Yeah. Yeah. And here in our little town, we've actually got young teenage groups now getting together instead of getting out there, you know, and not having anything to do and getting in trouble. They're focusing on putting together little paranormal groups, going out there and photographing, then bringing them to our center, you know, for us to explain it.
at some of these tours that I've gone on, how many young people do go on these things, teenagers, college-age kids, you know. And it's much better to do that and have fun and learn something than to be out causing trouble. So
yeah.
Well, and I think people are more open-minded now that they believe, they know that having an interest doesn't mean that you're evil or a witch.
Yeah.
Or some of the things that we might have been stereotyped in the past for just for having an interest.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm. Yeah. So anyhow, we're at the close of the hour, or the close of the last 2 hours, I guess. But it sure was a pleasure having you both on tonight for our Paranormal Saturday. And let's give out your website again. It's John. Okay, how are we going to say it again for me?
It's www.johnkachuba.com. It's JohnKachuba. And the two books are Ghost Hunting Ohio and Ghost Hunting Illinois. And they're pretty much available in all bookstores and all online dealers, internet bookstores as well.
And, Antoinette, how can they get a hold of you if they have any questions?
Contact me at dreamchasingmom@AOL.com. And my new book, Al Capone's Secrets from the Grave, Revealed, won't be out until December 2005.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll have a new website next week, and like I said, I'll have Mary. Mary will have the link as soon as I have it up and running.
Mm-hmm. And also, I want to let everyone know that this show will be playing again on live stream right after we finalize the live one right now. So that means that you two can be able to hear your show. Okay, right afterwards. It doesn't look like I'm going to have a group showing up tonight, so that means that I'll be able to get your show going and you'll be able to hear it.
Okay.
It's been a pleasure to speak with both of you.
Okay.
Yes, same here. Thanks, Mary. Thanks, Antoinette. It's been great.
Okay, and thank you again, and you'll be able to hear this on the live stream for the next week.
Great.
So, and people that want to listen to it on the live stream, just go to burlingtonnews.net/livestream. Nice and simple. burlingtonnews.net/livestream. There, what I've done there is I put up a regular website where it explains what players to use, how, you know, if you have any sort of connection problems, you know, I've got various troubleshooting ideas there, you know, that you can try out. But on a whole, you know, everyone should be able to listen to the live stream because it is dial-up friendly. And then afterwards, after this week is over, then it goes into our on-demand site, which is membership archived, and for, you know, a small fee of $20 a year, you have 3 years worth of archived shows. And I do that so that the money that I make off that, I can put out shows like this. So, I ask both of you to help support me, you know, by having others tune into our program. You know, so tell as many people as possible about BUFO Radio.
Absolutely.
And then for all the listeners tonight, please help support us through membership. And also to let as many people know as possible about the show that we did tonight. And in that way, you support our guests tonight, you know, and purchase their books. And I guess Brad and I will be coming to Chicago real soon and extending our little investigation on the underground tunnels with Antoinette. So
looking forward
to that.
To
yeah. So okay, you guys have good luck. I wish you much success.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Good night.
Good night.